Welcome, I'm Christina Michelle, inviting you to join me for Culture Rich Conversations, an ongoing feature of Juno Afternoon. Today, we're kicking off Women's History Month talking about trending hot topics in the Black community and a few women who have made us stand up and take notice of their accomplishments. We'll cover everything from Rihanna's halftime show performance to Angela Davis's reaction to her Mayflower ancestors and more. Joining me via Zoom is our producer, Natasha Boozer from Las Vegas, Nevada. Together, Natasha and I will share our thoughts, opinions, and varying points of view, and I can't wait to get started. From KTOO in Juneau, this is Culture Rich Conversations.
Culture Rich Conversations is made possible by a grant from the Social Justice Fund Grant Program of the Alaska Community Foundation.
Culture Rich Conversations on Juno Afternoon is sponsored in part by Mark Stofa and Sarah Hannon of the Alaska Wild Salmon Company, delivering fresh salmon to Juno homes since 2006. Learn more at goodsalmon.com or 907-321-4997.
You're listening to Culture Rich. Culture Rich.
Welcome to Culture Rich Conversations. I'm Christina Michelle. Today, we're discussing the latest hot topics in Black culture. Before we get started, I want to say a special thank you to everyone who attended and showed their support this past Saturday at the Black Awareness Association's Black History Month celebration, RISE. We want to say a special thank you to our sponsors and to the bakers who baked up some magical, yummy treats for the dessert auction. We raised much needed funds for our Black Excellence Scholarship Program and had a wonderful time, too. And speaking of Women's History Month, I want to share the bios of the Black women who were recognized at RISE for their achievements here in Juneau. We'll start off with Jocelyn Miles. Jocelyn is from the state of Maryland. She came to Juneau in 2013, accompanied by her son, Jonathan. Jocelyn loves her community and is one of the few Black business owners in Juneau. She is the owner of Scorpion Mortgage here in Juneau. Jocelyn is also a vocalist who's been singing since she was a child. She loves to perform, and her true passion is helping families realize their dream of home ownership. Jocelyn is currently working on a one-woman show opening at the Nickelodeon on March 12th. Stay tuned for details. The second woman who was honored is Sarita Knoll. Sarita Knoll is honored to currently serve her community, the city and borough of Juneau, as its financial controller. She has transplanted to Southeast Alaska as a child, and it quickly became the place her roots and her soul call home, even after living all over the world for short stints. She and her husband have loved raising their family in Juneau. Sarita is personally committed to lifelong learning and to always growing. Given the Proverbs 4:7 scripture, "Get wisdom, and with all you're getting, get understanding," became her life's mantra when she was a child, wandering Hoonah's mudflats. It is unsurprising that Sarita has a few degrees and that she is working on earning a master's in public administration from the University of Alaska Southeast. Degrees and career aside, Sarita believes her greatest success to date is that her family is thriving. The third woman that was honored is Maria Bailey. Maria is married to Ivan Bailey, and together they are the owners of the Northern Tea House in the Valley. They opened their business in 2013, and they celebrate an amazing milestone of 10 years of business in the capital city. Ivan's parents arrived in Juneau in 1992 from Michigan after retiring from military service. Ivan and Maria followed shortly after in 1993. They are the proud parents of one son, Ezekiel, aka Easy. And finally, the fourth woman who was honored is Sherry Patterson. So We just had a bullet point list for Sherry Patterson. There was so much to say that we couldn't even really figure out how to do it in a concise paragraph form. So bullet pointing some of her achievements. She's the mom, Grammy vocalist, public speaker, visionary, ordained minister, and lover of her community and unity. Sherry has 49 years in Alaska. 37 years in Juneau. She is also the president of the Black Awareness Association. She's co-chair with First Lady Donna Walker for Bridge Builders of Juneau. She's also a Big Brothers Big Sister local leadership council and former Big Sister. She's on the board of directors for the Healing Hand Foundation. She received the 2018 Mayor's Award for Excellence in the Arts. She was also featured in Rasmussen Foundation of Anchorage's Black in Alaska documentary and received a State of Alaska citation for service and leadership in Juneau in Alaska. She's the visionary for Roar's Women's Conference and Director of Patient Experience at Surge. She is also my mother, and I am her proud daughter. And so we are honoring Sherry Patterson. So these are just a few of the women that we wanted to recognize in honor of Women's History Month being March, and just say thank you to the women of color here in Alaska and specifically here in Juneau who are doing wonderful things in our community. So today we have Natasha, as I mentioned earlier, our producer, and she's joining us via Zoom. Natasha is also from Juneau, Alaska, but now currently resides in Nevada, in Las Vegas. Natasha, thank you for joining us today. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
All right. So let's get into it. We're talking about hot topics that are trending in the Black community and specifically about women. We're only 2 months into the year, but there's already quite a lot to talk about. So this is one of the biggest things. I don't know how we could have a show on hot topics without talking about what's trending and has been trending on the social media platforms since the Super Bowl. And I'm sure you guessed it. It's Rihanna's halftime performance. Woo! Yeah! Okay. What did we think?
I thought that she did an amazing job. I was very excited to see her, because we haven't seen her for a little while. We know she had a baby, and we've all been waiting for new music to come out from her for quite a long time. And so it was a real treat to be able to hear her and see her perform, as a mom and much older now and, with obviously a different kind of mindset. And I thought that her show was just so innovative, because there was one point when she was, you know, elevated in the air. And I remember thinking, I could never do that. I would be so scared. I would be like on my belly, holding on, saying, let me down, instead of singing and performing. There's no way. And it just seemed like I was glued to the television, and you could tell she was taking it all in because she was looking at the audience and she was owning it, and she looked confident. And when it was revealed she was pregnant, like clearly at least 6 months pregnant, it was just mind-boggling, because how can you do what she did under obviously so much pressure, just as an artist, as a woman of color, as a mother who's carrying an unborn child, and standing up there confidently owning that stage that she created from the vision she must have had for the halftime show. It was beautiful. I was thoroughly impressed. I'm a mom, and I've been pregnant before, and there's no way. I was very impressed. I thought it was beautiful. I was so proud of her. I thought she did a great job. What did you think?
I agree. I was so excited. First of all, I don't know why we haven't heard from her for the past 7 years, and I don't typically follow the like music artist or, you know, pop culture icons super, super closely. Like, I have an overview of what's going on, but I don't really like freak out or consider myself to be a huge fan of too many performers. So I'm not even sure why we didn't hear from her for 7 years. Was it because she decided to step back to work on mom life or her family, or she just decided?
I think it was her businesses. Okay. With Fenty.
Oh, that makes sense.
And yeah,
that makes sense.
I think that's what she was doing.
So she comes back. She's 35 now. That means she was 28 last time we saw her perform. And there was a big difference. She's more mature. Her voice has changed. She's had a baby, right? And so there was that aspect of it. All in all, I agree with you. I thought that it was wonderful. I was completely like freaking out and excited. It's the only reason why I watched the Super Bowl, was to see Rihanna's halftime show performance. And actually, her performance is the most viewed out of all halftime performances, like in the history of the Super Bowl. So I was in good company there. I agree with everything that you said. I thought that she was beautiful. I thought that, I mean, key points is that number one, she was completely covered up from head to toe. Like, when does that ever happen that you have a female artist who's doing a show, especially that big, and she's not, you know, exposing certain parts of her body? And there's nothing wrong with that. I think that that's beautiful too. But I think that Rihanna is such an innovator, like you said, and such a trailblazer that she's like, I don't need to follow the trends. I'm going to do this my way. And I'm going to be dressed from my neck down to my toes. And she did not wear heels. She wore tennis shoes. I just thought that her outfit alone was like a statement. And then, like you said, being suspended in the air, she was like 150 feet up there at one point, and she's pregnant. And she just did the thing. Like, her voice is beautiful. The aesthetics of the show was beautiful. I loved it. She only had male dancers, which was like awesome. And I was watching one of the reaction videos on YouTube, and it was like a group of men that were watching it, and they're like, oh yeah, okay. And they're like waiting for her to twerk and to like do all this shaking. And then they're like, oh yeah, like, let's see the girls dance. And then they realize, oh, those are not girls, those are men. And they were disappointed. And I'm like, yeah, the show wasn't for you. Okay. Like, this show was not to fulfill all of your sexual fantasies. Like, she is fully dressed and all of her dancers are men. Like, sorry about it. Not sorry. So I just thought that it was trailblazing in lots of ways. However, we are, you know, we represent a large population who loved her show, but there are quite a few people who did not think it was so great. And as a matter of fact, I think that she received, what is it, 100 complaints? Or the FCC received 100 complaints about her performance.
That's right.
Saying that, yes, it was too sexual. Her dance moves were too provocative. There were quite a few people who complained about the fact that, I guess, like at the end of her show, she threw up what is a controversial hand sign or gesture that was panned away from on when it was aired live. But if you go back and you look at the recording and you watch the other footage, like, it's clearly there. And so there's a lot of controversy about what that hand signal meant. So, you know, not everybody was a fan.
That's true. There were people. Yes. And I understood that. I think, you know, no one is for everybody. And I think if we think back to the history of the Super Bowl and the halftime show specifically, you can see it was one way for a long time before they started adding in different artists, artists of color, solo artists. So I think that each artist has tried to push the envelope a little bit and expand. And in doing so, you involve other communities in the audience to watch it and to want to enjoy the show. So I think with Rihanna's show, you know, people are going to be critical. You're not going to make everybody happy. But I did find it a little surprising because she was covered up, because you could tell that she put a lot of thought into her show. I didn't think it was very sexual or provocative. I thought it was just a really great show. There were a couple of things that made me take pause, but nothing that would make me want to go and file a formal complaint with the FCC because I just couldn't not say anything. You know what I mean? Like if I watch something that I feel is personally offensive to me, I'll just turn the channel or watch something else. I'm not gonna, you know, go out of my way to complain, because at the end of the day, we're adults and you don't have to watch what's in front of you. You can just change the channel. So I wasn't surprised that people were unhappy with her performance. Some people, some communities, but I did think that it was a little bit, you know, thou doth protest too much. It's like, it wasn't that bad. You know, like, yeah. Just don't look at it.
I agree. And it wasn't prolonged. And when I think about the backlash mm-hmm. that Shakira and J-Lo received last year, wait, was it last year or the year before?
I feel like it might have been the year before, but I remember the backlash.
Yeah, I felt so bad because it was such a beautiful show. And they got a lot of hate on that show because they said that it was, you know, over-sexualized. And I mean, I could see that because J-Lo was on a pole. So, I mean, she literally was like twirling upside down a pole, kind of half dressed, singing songs. And it was beautiful. And Shakira did her hip shaking thing that she's iconic for. You know, she's a legend for that. So I understand where people were coming from. And I still didn't think that it was too much. So how people still had the exact same complaint about somebody who's wearing all their clothes and there's no pole. I just, you know, I know Rihanna, like, she did a couple things that were like suggestive, but it wasn't prolonged and it wasn't, you know, I don't think it was like overly, I don't know. It just wasn't out there the way that, like you said, to take time to file a FCC complaint. It's a lot, but anyway, congratulations.
I just want to say, yes. And I agree with you, Rihanna, she knows how to bring the sexy. Like we've all seen her do her thing in concerts and on stage. And she didn't do the things that we've known her to do because it's her body and she owns her body and her sexuality, but she didn't. You could tell she held back.
Yeah.
So it was still a little surprising. She didn't go as far as she could have and as far as she's had in the past for award ceremonies. She did keep it pretty tame in my opinion. So I wondered if it was because she's a Black woman, or it was because it was Rihanna, or because people just feel like they have to complain. Like I did have questions about where is the root of this anger coming from, you know, cause it can't be, she's just too sexy. Cause it we've seen her be more sexy,
yeah. I guess. Yeah. And I think, you know, whether it's just people are going to find something to complain about, no matter what, or was it because she's a woman of color, or, you know, what, I think it's all of it. I think that there's a little bit of truth to all of those statements. I mean, honestly, like there was a couple of commercials that were way more provocative than her performance. Like I won't even get into it, but I'm like, really? And they aired those commercials over and over and over. Did anybody complain about those? I don't know. So, anyway,
not a hundred times.
Exactly. Yeah. So, but you know, we're super proud of Rihanna, really, really happy to see her, or have seen her back in the spotlight, and, happy for her and her family and the new baby on the way, and wish them lots of love and joy and health and success and all the good things. I was going to also mention the fun fact that the states that had the highest complaints really quick, surprisingly, were Texas, California, Michigan, Florida, New York, and Virginia. So yay, not Alaska. Yeah, with all of the liberals in California and New York, I'm just kind of surprised that they were in the top 6-7 of the complainers. That's something. All right. So one of the most fascinating and impressive parts of the halftime show, switching gears a little bit, was the ASL, our American Sign Language interpreter. So her name is Justina Miles, and she received quite a bit of attention after the halftime show as well. Justina made history by being the first Black woman who is deaf to perform in the Super Bowl's halftime show. So she also performed the Black national anthem, Lift Every Voice and Sing. So, Natasha, did you see footage of Justina doing her thing?
I did. And the first thing I thought was, there's an entire community in America and around the world, because we know the Super Bowl is broadcast around the world in many, many countries, of African-American people who are hearing impaired and speak with sign language, and to see themselves represented on stage on one of the biggest stages in the world. I thought that must be so beautiful for them to feel seen, to feel acknowledged, and to know that their life, they can do whatever they want with their life. They can be at the Super Bowl. You know, they can follow their dreams and not feel like they have to make themselves smaller, that because we see them and we appreciate them and we lift them up. And so I was so happy for every person of color who could 100% identify with her, seeing themselves represented on the stage like that, because it was beautiful. And I thought she did a great job. I was so proud of her. I was just like cheering for her all the way over here in Las Vegas from my little couch, because I was like, yes, that's because you don't always see it. You know that it's there, but she didn't just, you know, sign it, but it was like her own performance. Like she was an artist right there. And it was to see it for the Black national anthem and to see it with, you know, Rihanna. I know that Rihanna chose her. I just was so, so proud of that representation and the fact that the Super Bowl, you know, they greenlit it and they let it happen so that the world could see a different community that exists with us. And I thought it was great for Black History Month. I just loved it. I loved it. What did you think?
I thought the same. I was really surprised that she was so young. And so I think that that's amazing. She's like 20 or 21 years old. So to already have a platform as big as the Super Bowl halftime show, I mean, like she's definitely going places. I loved watching her perform as well. And I actually wish that they had had it on like, I don't know where you go to see the performer who's doing the sign language, but I wish that it was there. Like, I wish it was like on the screen for everybody, because I don't know. To me, it just added so much to the performance. And you're right, she was kind of an artist in her own right. Like, you don't even have to hear the song to know what song she was doing. Like, the first one where it's like, you know, better have my money. Like, you knew what she was saying. Like, you knew the song, like the way she was doing the hand gestures with the money and like, don't act like you forgot. And she like swiped her forehead. You're like, oh yes, honey. Yeah. We know what song you're doing right now. Like she just lit up like the sun. Like she just so beautiful. And also she can speak. And so that's amazing. Like people were like still like questioning whether she was deaf or not. And she is like fully 100%. But she signs beautifully. She speaks beautifully. And, you know, just hearing her talk about the process, like practicing, leading up, like the things that she does that make her her work and her performances stand out. I thought it was really cool. She was just saying like little tweaks and nuances to the way that she signs that she believes leads to her success. So I loved learning about that. And I look forward to seeing more from Miss Justina Miles. And I thought it was really cool that Rihanna slid into her DMs and and thanked her afterwards and was like, girl, I saw what you did. You did your thing. We rocked this show together. And I just thought that that was really beautiful, you know, to see women supporting each other. So, Awesome. All right. Well, in keeping with our theme of this year's Super Bowl, I would be remiss if I didn't also mention the all-female pilots that also made history on Sunday as well. So for the first time, the U.S. Navy jet flyover before the kickoff was piloted by an all-woman team, and it was pretty amazing. So I'm excited about that and what women are doing and making history. If you're just joining us on Culture Rich Conversations, I'm Christina Michelle. I'm here having a conversation with Natasha Boozer, and we're just talking about the hot topics trending in the Black community and honoring women for Women's History Month. So far, we've covered Rihanna's Super Bowl halftime performance, her ASL interpreter, and the women who piloted the flyover before the event. All of these women made history that Sunday. There's still a lot more to come, and we'll be right back.
And grass. Ka eat with the shu yi, we kashuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta kanakaya ha ani kak gunish cheese.
Welcome back to Culture Rich Conversations. I'm Christina Michelle. Before we went to break, Natasha and I were discussing this year's hottest topics so far, and let's jump back in. So our next hot topic is about Miss Angela Davis and her shocking reaction to the realization that her ancestors arrived in America on the Mayflower. Angela Davis is a militant Black American political activist who, on a recent episode of the show Finding Your Roots, became visibly disappointed and frustrated to learn that her ancestors were part of the 101 pilgrims who arrived here on the Mayflower. A lot is being said about her none-too-pleased reaction on social media. There are those that say she shouldn't be surprised because of the rampant sexual assault that occurred during the time of slavery, while others say they find it hard to believe someone who has spent her lifetime as such a staunch political activist could have ancestors that were on the Mayflower. So, Natasha, what are your thoughts?
So when I watched the clip, the video of her reaction, you could see that she was visibly unhappy, which I, when I researched her, because I didn't know as much as I know now about her and her opinion of white people, it was clear to me that, you know, she didn't want to have ancestors that came on the Mayflower. I think, you know, as the Black community in America, we all have to know that most of us, if not all, will have, you know, another, you know, race in our own race because of slavery, because of, you know, just the way things work in the world. But I did find it wasn't just her reaction that went viral, but people's reaction to her reaction that was going viral. And you did have basically two camps. You had the camps of, well, you should have expected that because of course. And then there were the people who were like, well, you know, you stand up and you rightfully so have things to say about racism and about slavery, but also sometimes it may have gone too far in the way that her activism was presented to, you know, America and the world. And so her being so angry kind of, I think, backfired, because I think that it's one thing to feel sadness for sexual assault and for, you know, rape that existed during a time of slavery, but also it was further than that. It was just, she didn't want to have any ancestors from the Mayflower related to her. And that was very clear. And I thought, I feel like if you're going to stand up against racism, then you have to keep it equal, right? You can't say racism is bad, but then also sometimes it seems to display that behavior as well. And that was how I received it. I thought, you know, it's one thing to feel sad about the way things happened, but it's different to just be disgusted. Because I think that that's not really how we, you know, bring people together. And I think that was being, like people were talking about that on Twitter and on Facebook and Instagram in the comments, because her reaction was so visceral. And so she was very unhappy with it. And I thought that, I think there's something there. I think it's not just about the atrocities that happened, but she just was disgusted. And I thought that maybe it was a little bit too far. I didn't agree with her reaction, but you never know how you're going to react. We've all seen, you know, people who are white who found out they have Black ancestors. But with the other way around, I think this is the first time we've seen a Black person who found out they had white ancestors and reacted in such a profound way and such a shocking way, which is why I took notice. It's why I thought it'd be something we should discuss. What did you think?
Well, I'm wondering how much of it was, I don't want to say dramatized or over dramatized. I'm just going to say it. Was it over dramatized? Because, you know, here we are talking about it now, right? And it was something that was aired. It was like national TV. Like, they're, things are done all the time for reactions and for ratings. I'm not saying that she didn't feel the way that she felt and or that she shouldn't have or should have or whatever. But, you know, that reaction of, you know, that you said, like, it just felt like a little bit much and over the top. Like, I wonder if that was intentional. That's my thoughts.
I mean, I don't know. You might be onto something there. Because we're talking about her now and before mm-hmm. we weren't. So there's something to be said for wanting to, I don't want to say be relevant, but just be a part of the conversation for whatever reason that it benefits her brand or whatnot. I didn't think about that when I first saw the video, but now that I think about it, I'm just like, I don't understand why you're so upset, you know, because I mean, I don't think it's that upsetting. If it was me, I would, you know, I would be curious, you know, as to, you know, how they were when they came to America and what were they like. But I don't think that I would be disgusted. I don't feel that in my heart. And I just feel like that's not, I don't know. I mean, I think maybe it is in keeping with Angela Davis and the person that she is, but I would also think that at the age that she is now, maybe she would have some perspective and maybe consider how much she hopefully has learned about humanity and people and be able to evolve from where she was in the 70s and the 80s. So that's why it was surprising to me, because I'm like, we haven't evolved from where we were 40 years ago. But, you know.
Yeah, well, and it's history too. I think that I agree that I probably would approach it with more curiosity than anger. because it's something that is a part of her history, and there's nothing that can be changed about that. And so it does seem, I don't know. It seems a little bit out of place, but you know, I also don't know. I've received information that I reacted to that I probably wouldn't have anticipated my reaction, and it wasn't nationally televised, right, for people to judge. And so, you know, there's that part there too. All right. Well, it is no secret that the Academy Awards needs to continue doing the work when it comes to diversity in their voters and their chosen nominations. To that end, let's talk about Danielle Deadwyler and her recent comments on Kermode and Mayo's take regarding this year's Best Actress nominations. Danielle Deadwyler is one of the stars of the movie Till. And the director of that film was quoted as saying that Danielle worked in an industry that is aggressively committed to upholding whiteness and perpetuating an unabashed misogyny towards Black women. Danielle was quick to agree with her director's comment. She was quoted saying, "Nobody is absolved from not participating in racism and not knowing that there is a possibility of its lingering effect on the spaces and the institution. Whether it's direct or indirect, it impacts who we are." All right. So, Natasha, what are your thoughts regarding whether or not Black actresses are missing out on nominations as a result of misogyny and racism? Like, and I find this really interesting because it's not even something that I knew to be an issue. It's kind of like a couple seasons ago when we talked to the orchestra conductor, and we learned that there's not that many Black people in the orchestra, and not because Black people don't, you know, want to play classical music or don't play those instruments or don't do it well, but there are actually barriers, like real ones, that were keeping them from even getting to auditions. So to know that this is, you know, possibly kind of we're seeing like the same issue here with Black actresses is really interesting to me. So, yeah, what are your thoughts about this?
I thought it was interesting because I noticed it when the nominations came out, because you hear about the movies throughout the year, especially when it's a movie with a mostly Black cast, especially when it's a female Black-led movie. At least I hear about it because I sit up and take notice and say, okay, what's this about? I really want to see this because I haven't seen this before or not very often. And I was disappointed when I realized that even the people who vote for the actors and give out the nominations, I think it's something like 70% or almost 80% of them are not people of color. And so the people who are of color who are voting, it's a small percentage. So then you have the majority rules, right? And so you can't outvote 70% of the people in an academy. But I had thought after, I think it was a few years ago, maybe 5 years ago now, where there was a campaign about Oscars So White. And I thought that once they were alerted to, we can see that there's not a lot of people of color represented, and you know that it's there, maybe that will make a difference. But it hasn't necessarily, and it didn't. And it's not just that we as the viewer or the audience can see it, but the fact that the actors, directors, producers, people that you don't see, people who are behind the scenes are also talking about it. I think it's time that we address it in a real way, because like you said, there are barriers. It's not, and the thing is, it's not that there aren't actresses that are talented enough to be nominated. And it's not that there aren't stories that are just as good or even better to be told. It's that they're not even given a foot in the door when they're there, when they're knocking, when they're saying, I have this art, I have this talent. And I was told that all I have to do is be talented and, you know, pick myself up by my bootstraps and then I will get a chance. But that's not what's happening. There's still things that stand in the way for representation to be seen, to be acknowledged, and then celebrated. And if we can see it, that means they have been seeing it for a long time, the people who make those decisions. And I just think that enough is enough. You know, they have these things in place where you have to have women in scenes. You have to have people of color in scenes, people of color on the staff and the crew. But then when it comes time to give nominations and recognize the art and the work and the great excellence that has been presented, they're not chosen. So that was why it was fascinating to me, because they're speaking out about it too. And they're not just letting it continue to be what it always has been. What did you think?
Is it Jamie Foxx who started kind of like a boycott campaign of the Oscars?
I think so. Okay. It was him and his friend.
Okay. Well, yeah, I think that back when that first started, not that I didn't think that it was, a real issue there. Obviously, there was something that was, he was passionate. Something was happening that he was passionate enough to launch like an anti-Oscars campaign about, right? But I didn't quite understand the depth of it. And I also tend to think kind of, I don't know, I can play the devil's advocate a lot. And so I think that I was, looking at other reasons maybe why this could be happening and not really wanting to see the reality of the fact, how race is playing into these nominations and lack thereof. So I'm also happy that this is the conversation. I mean, not happy, but I'm glad that it's coming forward and that it's in the spotlight more and it's getting more attention. I do remember when we talked to Mr. Dickerson, the orchestra conductor, he said that once conversations like this started to come forward about the orchestra, they completely changed the way that they did auditions. I mean, to the point where they actually had musicians come in and audition with a curtain up so you couldn't see who was auditioning. Like, it was that serious. Like, you couldn't see whether they were male or female, and you couldn't see what race they were. And when that started happening, they started getting way more, not just Black musicians, but musicians of color in general. And so I mean, it's unfortunate. And that wasn't even that long ago. We're talking about less than 20 years ago that started happening and changed the way that changed the face of, that sector of the music world. So what needs to happen for this to change for actors and actresses of color? I don't know, but I am happy that some attention is on it. And I am hopeful that it brings about justice and fairness, equality, and open doors and bigger platforms.
Yes, I agree. I agree, because I think, people, there's a lot of talk lately about why do Black people talk about race so much? Mm-hmm. And I think the point is, and I think I've said it before, we don't want to talk about it.
Right.
We just want to live our lives. We love our families. We want to enjoy the world, have a good time. But there are things in place that make it difficult for us. And there are people who just are racist and they don't want to see people of color progress. And so if there wasn't this systematic racism and there wasn't things in place that do make it hard for people of color to excel and to achieve the life goals they have, then we wouldn't talk about it. It wouldn't be a thing that we ever even have to deal with anymore. Because like I've said before, when I walk out of my house, I know that I'm a Black woman, not just a person going to the store, because I am reminded of it when I encounter somebody who doesn't want to serve me at CVS or Walgreens, or someone who doesn't want to, at the check counter, the grocery store, at the Vons or the Smiths. Like, I know what that's like. And I also know what it's like to not have to even deal with that, because I have friends who it never even occurs to them. Like you and I, if we were in small town Pennsylvania, we probably wouldn't go to a local diner where we don't see people of color there. We'd probably go to a place that is a little more popular because we would hope that people would receive us and just see us as customers and not as Black customers. And I think that that's the point. It's not that actresses are just complaining. It's that they have been shut out and held back from the success that they've seen people who are not even necessarily as talented as they are get to reach heights and get to receive the accolades. When you have the Viola Davises and you have Angela Bassett and you have people who you and I have watched our whole lives from childhood, and they're just now in the latter part of their lives receiving accolades for a history of talent that they've had. But there are other people who will receive accolades over and over and over and over again, who may not necessarily be as talented or even put out the work that is the same caliber, but you and I see it. And are we not supposed to talk about it? Are we supposed to pretend like it's not there so that people can be comfortable? Or can we speak up to make change and to bring history forward? I think that we have to keep having the conversation because if we stop talking about it, people are going to gaslight us into thinking that doesn't exist, that we're the crazy ones. And we know that we're not.
Well, and it also reminds me of what was happening with Monique a few years ago when she had launched this anti-Netflix campaign. And that was like ballsy, like, or should I say gutsy? She just was very much against, like, come on, like, I love Netflix. I love Monique, but I'm going to keep my Netflix subscription. So am I. And I also hope that she gets more money. You know what I mean? It's like, but like,
you can both, want both
are true. But I hear where she was coming from because, you know, Monique has been in the game for decades. I mean, since, you know, hey, Professor, like with Professor Ogilvy, like, come on. Like, who doesn't know Monique for her role as Miss Parker? And you know, all the way up to like the Queens of Comedy. And, you know, what she did with Precious was like, oh my gosh, like that wasn't phenomenal. Even comedy. Like she pivoted in a way that I don't think I've often seen. And she really like untypecasted herself in that role and did beautiful work. And she got paid like $30,000 or something. Like it was something crazy. And so for her to finally, you know, put her foot down and say, hey, like there are actresses and comedians who have been doing this for a fraction of the time, who are making, you know, double, triple, quadruple what I'm making. Like, it's not right. I hear her, and a lot of people did. And, you know, a lot of people tried to say that it was because she's difficult to work with and, you know, all of these things. But come on, there are white actresses who are far more difficult to work with who still were out earning her. And so it definitely is a thing and has continued to be. Did you see Wakanda Forever?
I did.
You did.
Oh, okay. Man. I watched it for my birthday. I watched it on my birthday. And I just...
Happy belated, the way. Your birthday was on the 25th. Yay.
It was. I am proud to say I'm 43. Ooh, and girl. I'm very happy to be here.
How do you put your age out there when people know that we went to school together? If you're 43, that makes me some. No. I was advanced.
I've always known your birthday. But yes, I did see it. It was beautiful. I couldn't believe that I waited so long. It was beautiful. It was amazing. I was very proud to be able to see it and share it with my daughter and my son, and know that in their lifetime, they get to have this movie, these two movies, where for my kids, that's normal. Like I have told you in private that my children have words to say when I'm like, let's watch this. And their first reaction is, where are the Black people? I'm like, I don't know, but I love this show from my childhood. And they're like, Mom.
That's interesting.
Oh,
that's actually like, yeah. I was watching Wings the other night because I have this habit of watching like old sitcoms from the 80s and the 90s as I go to sleep because they're wholesome, right? Like, yes. you can fall asleep and I know that whatever, yes, I'm hearing in my dreams or like my subconscious mind is absorbing, it's not going to be like super crazy. But I've been like binge watching Wings for a couple weeks, and like last night it hit me that like in probably like 50 episodes, I've not seen one Black person, like not one. Like, we have Antonio, the cab driver, and he's Italian, but like, that's it. Like, there was no other color at all. Like, nothing. Like, in all of Nantucket, like all the people coming through that airport, like no Black people ever came through Nantucket. I don't know. But it's interesting that you're like, we never noticed that. Well, I'll say I didn't as a kid. Like, there was no representation. And it kind of was normal. And so I'm actually happy to hear that your kids are noticing that and saying that, and hopefully don't have to continue to for a long time to come.
I mean, I do the same thing. And I used to love Wings. Like, I was a diehard Wings fan. So I completely relate to that. But yeah, I agree. I hope that they can have more presentation for themselves when they watch TV. But yeah, I never noticed it as a kid either.
Well, and the reason why I originally had brought up Wakanda Forever is because it received numerous nominations while The Woman King received none. And the belief is that the Oscars didn't feel comfortable giving two Black female leads accolades because it didn't suit their taste, quote unquote. So I'm just going to read this quote. Director Gina Prince Bythewood, the Black woman that directed The Woman King, responded to her film not receiving one nomination in any category, and there are 24 of them, by saying, "It was a reflection of where the Academy stands and the consistent chasm between Black excellence and recognition. And sadly, this is not just an issue in Hollywood, but in every industry." So it looks like there's still lots of work to be done, but we're hopeful.
Yes, we are, definitely.
Yeah. All right. Well, I can't believe that it's already at the end of this segment. We've covered a lot this afternoon. Tasha, any last comments before we wrap up?
I would just say that I love talking to you on the radio because you and I have had many, 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 many years of conversations in private. And it's a lot of fun for me to talk to you on the radio about the things, some of the things that we talk about in private, and to have an audience that hopefully is learning a little bit more about the Black community and people of color. And hopefully it, you know, opens their minds a little bit. So I had a great time. Thank you for having me.
Likewise. I appreciate you being here and I appreciate your perspective and how you actually really help me grow, and you give me different perspectives and you make me watch the news sometimes. And you really just pushed me to think about things from a different angle. And so I appreciate that. And thank you for taking the time to be with me here today to have this conversation.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. Well, it was a really great way to start Women's History Month. And we are super excited about the episodes that we have coming up to actually end this season of Culture Rich Conversations. And I think it's awesome that we get to end it during Women's History Month. And so stay tuned because there's lots of great things coming up. This is Culture Rich Conversations. I'm Christina Michelle, and we'll be right back. We'll be right back.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
Welcome back to Culture Rich Conversations. I'm Christina Michelle. Today in Black history, we celebrate the establishment of Howard University, which occurred on March 2nd, 1867 in Washington, D.C. The school was named after founder General Oliver O. Howard, who led the Union Army in the Civil War and was the commissioner of the Freedmen's Bureau. Today, Howard produces more on-campus African-American PhDs than any other university in the world. Whoop, whoop. It has also been attended by a number of distinguished alumni, such as U.S. Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall, author Toni Morrison, actress Felicia Rashad, and former mayor and United Nations Andrew Young. What started out as a simple idea eventually developed into a sprawling university on a beautiful campus in our nation's capital. Howard University is a historically Black research institution that genuinely is the home of excellence in truth and service. We appreciate you for listening today, and we look forward to hearing any feedback you have. You already have our email address. It's junobaa@gmail.com and our Facebook info. You can just search for us, junobaa, on Facebook. And our mailing address is P.O. Box 33734, Juneau, Alaska 99803. Today's producer and our guest was Natasha Boozer. We'll meet again next week. And in the meantime, may your life be blessed and flow with ease. I'm Christina Michelle, and this has been Culture Rich Conversations.
Culture Rich Conversations is made possible by a grant from the Social Justice Fund Grant Program of the Alaska Community Foundation.
You're listening to Culture Rich. Culture Rich. Thank you.